Another update from home and another one on time. Wow, that's two in a row. this is actually going quite well lately. So this is going to be another one which isn't too lengthy. I do actually have a couple of blog posts very close to being finished. One of them at least will go live next week. Hopefully the other one, if not the week after. That's going to be an absolute crazy one too, but I'll come back to that later on. So this week, though, I didn't have that stuff, but it had a whole bunch of other things that are kind of leading up to some of these posts too. But a little bit of sort of business as usual in terms of events and things coming up first. Actually, I'm recording this on, where are we? It's like nearly 1 o'clock in the afternoon, my Friday afternoon. I've got to go and grab Scott Helm and his family from the airport tonight. So he's going to be here for about the next 3 weeks, actually. So he's going to be getting a lot of his Australian on. I told him to bring his thongs. He looked at me strangely, but said, okay, let's do it. So he's going to be here for the next few weeks because we have got the NDC security event coming up on the Gold Coast on the end of the month. And then shortly after that, I'm going to jump on a plane, go to America again for NDC Minnesota. I'm going to do that. And then just to keep the NDC trend going that weekend, I'm going to go to New York and do NDC Security New York as well. So I will put links to those three events coming up. I'm doing workshops on all of them, as well as Cyber Talks at the Gold Coast. I'm doing the keynote for Minnesota. And New York is just workshops. We're not doing any talks there. But I'll be at all those three events coming up. And what I'll do over the next few weeks is Scott's here. I'll do these weekly updates with him as well because people seem to like it when he talks as well. Apparently, we have some good banter. So those things are coming up. Now, moving on to my list of things for this week. I always do have a list. Actually, first of all, I feel like I'm looking less tired this week. So that's good. I have actually been catching up on a little bit of sleep, which has been nice. But that hasn't stopped me doing the data breach things. So a few things this week. Oh, geez, how do I explain this one? Now, I'm probably going to pronounce the name wrong. Knuddles, Nuddles, something like that. It's a German social media website. 808,000 records breached in September. Instant exposed email addresses, usernames, real names, and passwords stored in plain text. Not such a good look for these guys. And there were a couple of interesting things that happened out of this. One is they did get, I think, you know what, I'm going to double check my figures here, but they got a fine of like 20,000 euros as a result of that incident. And I'm going to check this because I'd hate to sort of say they did and then they didn't or something like this. And it's also kind of interesting to see fines levied at organizations for data breaches because this is like kind of what we want. Under most situations, and I guess what I mean by that is that we do want some financial incentive not to have a data breach, other than the fact of it might make you look bad. If I look for 20, I'm going to get everything from 2017, which isn't going to work well. But if I scroll down, so this Knuddles thing was, I'm going to get angry emails from German people now. Tell them I pronounced it wrong. You know what I did? I put it in the breach description. So if I go to the front page of Have I Been Pwned and we click on Knuddles, it was 20,000 euros. So Knuddles was subsequently fined 20,000 euros for the breach. In fact, I'll put a link to that here in my notes because it is interesting to see a fine levied for this. In fact, the headline here is German Flirting Network. How does a flirting network work? Like, is it it's not an adult site? It's not an adult tree site? Anyway, related back to GDPR, apparently for which 20,000 euro probably seems like a pretty small amount given how big some of the penalties can be. But again, like, depends on how bad they screwed things up. Did they try to cover it up? Were they just very, very good actors and then the organization did the right thing? Might only deserve 20,000. Regardless, floating site, 20 grand, not so good for those guys. So that was one of them. The other one here on my list of breaches this week is DataCamp. Now, DataCamp had 760,000 records breached. They seem to be some sort of data scientist resource. Exposed data included email and IP addresses, names, passwords stored as bcrypt hashes. Much better than plain text. Now, they were part of this massive trove of data that appeared around February. There was a big story in the register. There was that, MyFitnessPal, MyHeritage, a whole bunch of other things that are already in Have I Been Pwned. I'll have to go back and double check, but I think it's now pretty much every different incident from that collection that's now gone live. There might be one or two missing, actually, so I'll have to look into that. If you have those, reach out. So business as usual there. Incidentally, hit rates as well in terms of accounts already and have I been pwned. 37% of the Knuddle email addresses were already in there, which is actually a fairly low number. I suspect due to the German origin of it, and perhaps I just don't have as many German people in data breaches, DataCamp 68%, which seems to be more consistent with the hit rate, for want of a better term, that I'm getting on these breaches. So there's those ones. Now, there are also four different breaches that I'm currently in the midst of disclosure on, and hence I cannot name, but I want to try and, because I put out a bit of a, I don't know, a bit of, it wasn't a ranty tweet, a bit of a frustrated tweet about this last night. Now, there are three of these breaches. I'm trying to get in touch with the company and I can't get a response. Now, these are breaches that have tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of email addresses in them. I have a pretty high degree of confidence they're legitimate. In some of them, I'm very, very confident. In others, it looks very legitimate. It's certainly worth taking seriously. And I'm just looking at my dates here. So one of these, I actually tried to go through and test whether these accounts existed on the 3rd of April. The site was offline. So yeah, so it's not a real good look. I then went through and tested and found multiple Mailinator addresses on password resets. So just as a recap of how I do verification. Let's say it's Acme Core, right? Someone says, here's Acme Core data. I'll go to the data, I'll find some Mailinator addresses. So remember, Mailinator is a public mailbox. So you could send an email to troy@mailinator.com and then go to mailinator.com and enter Troy, and it will show you all the Viagra spam that account apparently gets. It's, yeah, okay, it's just any account on the web gets that sort of stuff. It's not just me, trust me. So you can go and have a look in the mailbox, and what this means is that when someone gives me a data breach, if I pull out, say, three random Mailinator addresses, and every one of them then gets a password reset if I put it into that feature of the website, it's like, oh, isn't this coincidental? Every single address that I test from the alleged breach actually has an account. That's probably going to be a legitimate breach. So this one did tick that box in terms of the responses that came back. My note here is sent message to them via their contact form on the 10th of April, which is 2 days ago. I'm going to give them another day before I escalate this further. And escalating further usually means going onto social media these days and going, hey, does anybody have a security contact for? Which is what I did for this next one. There's another one here. My notes here are usernames in the breach confirmed via enumeration and registration. So I'm trying to register with a username that's already in there, and it says, no, you can't because this username's already in use. Emailed their public support address on the 8th of April, so that's now 4 days ago. I tweeted about it yesterday. Someone actually got in touch with me yesterday and said, hey, look, I have an account on that site. If you would like to help me verify it, then, you know, I'll give you some help. So I sent the person their record and they're like, yeah, this looks like my data. So very, very likely legitimate. This is a site that definitely should be responding. They're not. Another one here as well, this I won't give too much away. This is a foreign site, foreign insofar as not native English language. Verified as legit based on multiple addresses tested on password reset. On the 10th of April, I filled in the contact form. I also reached out via Facebook. That's now 2 days ago. So again, I get that another day, and then I have to sort of say publicly, hey, does anyone have a security contact at? And every one of these incidents is just infuriatingly hard work. There's another one here, which is another foreign site, another non-native English language. Look, I'm Australian, everything's foreign to me, but, you know, foreign language site. I have actually been in touch with these people. I've been in touch with the CTO. I've been in touch with people in the organization. I have sent them everything that I have received. It's obviously come as a bit of a surprise to them. I've verified it with a high, high, high degree of confidence. They are not replying to me anymore. In fact, they stopped replying after they said it's going to take them a very long time to investigate. And I'm not going to give too much away about how long that is, why I think they're not replying. But now I've got to sort of go, well, these guys now know that a figure, which is at least a million, it's a seven-digit figure, of their users are now floating around the web. And their email address is there and their passwords are there and they're not doing anything about it. Not fast enough anyway. So the dilemma for me is it's like, well, I have I been pwned subscribers in there? And I told these guys that if I found their data, I'll let them know. Now, I've found their data, and I'm quite confident it's their data. And there's a very high likelihood that their accounts are suffering account takeover attempts in other places as well, because they've reused their passwords and done all the things we know you shouldn't, but people actually do. So how long do I give it? What do I do? There's not one clear-cut answer for everything, because there are always different dynamics at play. So I got to figure out what to do with these guys, which is probably going to be going back to them via the channels that we've been privately discussing on and say, look, you've got this long before I do that thing. Now you make up your mind how you want to handle it. But it's just enormously frustrating trying to do this disclosure responsibly for the organization involved, but also responsibly for the people involved. You know, my subscribers who want to know about things like their data being spread around the web. I would want to know that if it was my data. So there's a little ethical dilemma that I have to deal with. Not an unusual one. I mean, I've had to do this many times before, but it doesn't get easier. And this is what really bugs me. Now, speaking of things that really bug me, I want to go off on a very, very different tangent here and have a massive rant about something which was a Twitter rant during the week, but I want to embellish on it a bit further here, and then you're going to see one of the upcoming blog posts is really, really going to tear something to shreds here. It's about kids and services and products designed for kids that are internet connected and collect their data. Now, I say this in generic terms because I don't want to sort of talk too specifically just yet. You'll see why after that blog post comes out. There's a bunch of stuff out there targeted either directly for children to use. And when I say children, I mean they could be like my daughter's age, 6 years old, or for parents to do things like monitor children. So many of these products are just preying on FUD. Yeah, fear, uncertainty, doubt, like preying on the fact that parents are worried about something happening to their children looking at inappropriate things, their children going places on the internet they shouldn't or talking to the wrong people. It's about parents being scared. And look, I guess a lot of marketing works this way, right? It looks for the things that people are scared about and it tries to solve that problem for them. You can pick all sort of aspects of life about this, things to protect yourself from bad guys, everything from the digital things like antivirus and whatever else it may be, go and buy our product because there's a guy on the dark web who's trying to get you, through to physical security. They like a lot of guns in America, like all of this sort of stuff. It's like, let's prey on your fears and sell you something. It bugs me in particular when it's kids involved because there's a really emotional heartstring these services can pull. It's like, oh, you better install this software and monitor everything they're doing. Otherwise, they might see porn. It's like, well, it's the internet. What do you think's going to happen? How about you just do some damn parenting instead? Brings me to my thread. Now, let me read this thread and then I'll sort of touch on some more points. This is a multi-tweet thread. I've been looking at a bunch of kid-related devices and services lately, most relating to how parents can monitor and control their activities. It's just consistently, horrifyingly bad. FUD ridden at best, massive privacy violations at worst, i.e. data accessible to the public. For example, there are many services out there that fit squarely into the category of spyware, sometimes referred to as stalkerware, which involve compromising a device, such as an Apple iPhone, installing custom profiles to be able to intercept encrypted communications, send it off to whatever the third party is providing the product, and then they accidentally publish it all to the publicly facing web in a directory, which is open to everyone with directory browsing enabled as well, just to make it easy to enumerate through. Our motherboard had a great piece on this just the other day where I had literally seen this folder. So I chatted to the reporter involved at the time. They said, hey, check this out. And it's like, holy shit, here are gigabytes and gigabytes of children's photos, children's voices, and they're there because parents are worried about them doing something on the internet. Now, my eldest, my son, he's 9 years old. He's going to become a teenager. This is normally the way it goes. He's a pretty sensible kid. I'm sure all parents say this. But there are certainly kids out there that do make bad choices in terms of things like the photos they take. I would hate to think that stuff might end up on the publicly facing internet one day. And when you deliberately compromise devices and weaken the security from the manufacturer in order for you, the parent, to spy on it, this is the risk that you take. We'll go on with the thread. The problem is you've got a bunch of technically illiterate parents, understandable, being pushed things by schools that are influenced by marketers, much less understandable, and built with near zero focus on security. Inexcusable. Now, I'm going to try and be a little bit generic in the way I describe this. My experiences of late have been that schools really want to push these products too, and this kind of bugs me, because I would expect that the schools are the ones that understand the ramifications of these things the best. But the problem is that a lot of these schools, I don't think, are particularly switched on. I don't think they really understand the risks involved, and I also don't think they really understand some of the things you can do natively with devices that give you a lot of parental controls. I'm going to talk about those in the very last tweet of this thread. So it worries me that we're getting stuff pushed on kids by people in positions of authority that really just don't understand what the hell they're doing. Moving on. You worried about your kids online? Talk to them. Browse the web with them. Introduce them to the wonders of the web on your terms and physically monitor them. You know, like exist in the same room for a bit. This to me just like it. And look, I appreciate this is going to be harder when I have teenage children and they want more privacy and they're in the room with their own devices. But for me, it starts now. Like, whenever my kids are on a device, and this is, they don't always follow the rules, but at least the rules are you got to ask, you know? You got to ask, do you want to be able to use an iPad for a bit or an iPhone or something like that? If so, we'll give it to you. You get to use it for a small amount of time. Most of the time, though, they just want to watch people playing games on YouTube. But they're in the room where I'm wandering past and I'm looking at what they're doing. And we're talking about what they're doing. Sometimes they see stuff they don't like. My son kept seeing scary clowns on YouTube, so we talked about the scary clowns. The engagement with kids is really, really important. And I appreciate that for me, and probably for you as well, if you're watching this podcast, you're more technically adept than the average parent. But even if the parent knows very little about the technology, at least they can take an interest in what the kids are doing and they can see, what is the kid doing? Are they browsing sites which they deem inappropriate? Are they talking to people that they shouldn't be talking to? But if you're there physically present in the room, that is so much better than compromising the device to try and suck data surreptitiously out of their communications. Moving on. Except that they're going to see porn. They're going to swear in chats. They're going to talk to people they don't like. And 90% of the time, they're more technically adept than their parents and will know how to hide it and circumvent the parental controls. It's one of the things I lament. Like, every single time I see any sort of parental control, there's a way around it. There's always a way around it. I've got a blog post in draft related to this, which I think is part of this upcoming series of things I'm going to write about kids or probably try and finish. But I've got a comment in there from a kid that emailed me when I was talking about this online. He's like, yeah, my parents have parental controls on my device. I know exactly how to get around that. Like, there are just so many. I mean, how are these controls going to work? You know, they're doing things like blocking at the DNS level, or they're trying to block at an IP level or something like that. It's like, how simple is that to get around? Or they're trying to block at a network level. There are physical devices being sold out there. So before you know it, a kid's picking up Tor or a kid's picking up a free VPN tool and they're just routing straight through this. It's like, this is not hard. And I appreciate that this does sort of take out that bottom level of competency. You know, it's just like little kids sitting there just having a browse around, accidentally clicking a bad link. Yeah, it can take that stuff out. Incidentally, devices can do that natively as well without third-party products. But then for the kids that want to get around this, it's not hard to do. And most of the time, they've got a much better idea of how this stuff works than their parents do. Here's a fun story. I remember someone, a lady once emailed me and she said, I think the kid was 12. She's like, hey, my 12-year-old son is using a tool called Fiddler while he's playing games. I'm worried about what he's up to. And as we delved into it, the kid was using Fiddler, and they were using Fiddler script to effectively rewrite requests and responses such that, you know, let's say they're shooting and they've got, you know, 6 bullets left. It's like, well, I'm just going to rewrite the response so that my gun on the client side actually thinks I've got 20 bullets left. And they modify stuff like this. Now, I personally think that's kind of cool. But I can see how this starts to worry parents, because I've got no idea about this stuff most of the time. I'll talk to my kids all day long about this stuff, but I'll never install the sorts of software or buy the kinds of tracking devices I keep seeing peddled. These things are consistently absolute rubbish, and they prey on scared and uninformed parents and teachers to get traction. And they are. They're just rubbish up and down in so many different ways. I have something on my desk here, which is going to wait until you see what I mean by this. So again, when this blog post comes out, because we've got disclosures and things like this to do, but it is just unfathomably rubbish. And I'm trying to think about how to phrase this without giving too much away, but if you go out and you buy things designed to spy on children or cheap physical hardware designed to give you access to things, think about how much effort actually went into security and privacy. You know, particularly when you sort of compare that to the sorts of devices you give Apple. Now, let's take an example which is already very public, something like Cloud Pets. You go and buy like a $20 talking teddy bear or whatever it was that can record a child's voice and put it on the internet, made by a company that you've never heard of, which is run on a shoestring. How surprising is it that the kids' voices then got exposed all over the web? Is that really surprising? No, it's not. But hey, your child got to talk to a teddy bear. How cool is that? Last point here. Lastly, resources from the big OS vendors to help parents without putting kids even further at risk. And I've got a link here to Apple, Microsoft, and Google. So probably the three biggest OS vendors as of today. They all have family controls. They call them different things, but they allow you to do things like screen time. So I'm seeing, for example, products pushed by schools, third-party products, to install on an iPhone so that you can do screen time. It's got it built in. It has literally got native parental controls where I can have my iPhone and I have an account and I'm a dad. And then there's a kid over there and the kid has an account, but they're a kid. And as the dad, I can set controls on the kid and it's all native and it's done by Apple, not some fly-by-night company that you've never heard of. Like, it is there. Access controls around the ability to install apps, the ability to buy apps. And I'm seeing these products pushed to do these things which are in the platform natively. Now, granted, maybe some of these products can go a bit further. Maybe you can use the one unified product across both your iPhone and your Windows PC. But at the very least, understand the gap, right, between what these things do natively, what I can do with this phone right here, and what these other products are that are being peddled. Now, very interestingly, one I've seen being peddled quite heavily just recently. I can't find any information on the website about what they do above and beyond the native controls of the OS, which frankly is a little bit of a red flag. Do they even want to tell parents about it? Well, no, they don't want to tell parents about that because they're trying to sell a thing. So obviously it's getting me a bit fired up. It's getting me fired up because I've got kids, and it's also getting me fired up because I just get the shits when I see companies trying to make dollars out of something like this, which is really to the disadvantage and the detriment of the people using them. So stay tuned. There's going to be a lot more coming there. I don't know if it'll be next week that this story will go out, possibly the week after due to disclosure timelines. But when you see this one, it will be an absolute holy shit moment. All right, so there's that. Last thing, sponsorship-wise. So I am sponsored again by Varonis this week. Now, Varonis has been doing a lot of stuff around data breach investigations with my previous sponsorship slots. This week, they're doing something totally cool, which is talking about The Enemy Within, which is a free course that you can unlock, which was written by me. So this was a course I wrote for these guys a little while ago. And I actually really quite like this course because it was, I'll tell you what's in it in a moment, but it's basically all about how people inside an organization pose a threat to you. So we've got 8 topics here, including an intro and a summary. We'll skip those. Things like where do insider threats originate from, assets that are targeted by insiders, the threat of malicious actors, the threat of unintentional insiders. So this is an interesting one. What about the people inside your company who are nice people? They're not malicious. They're just not real good at not clicking on things that they shouldn't. But then their access rights then grant someone else to all the things that they have access to. They're now an unintentional insider. Then there's a discussion around principle of least privilege and all this sort of stuff. How insiders exfiltrate data, defensive measures. And all of this is a 1-hour, 3-minute course as well, totally free, put together courtesy of Varonis and available for you to go and watch. So I'll link through to that. I hope you do go and enjoy that because I really enjoyed making it. So that's it for now. I'm going to try and wrap this up before I've got to go grab Scott from the airport. And then next week when we do this, he and I will both come to you from somewhere on the Gold Coast and we'll do the update together. If there is anything you would like to hear us talk about or hear from Scott, drop me a note and I'll try and make sure we cover those as well. Thanks for watching.